Today, we're moving beyond imposter syndrome, and we're having an honest, vulnerable conversation about the ways in which childhood pain and trauma influence our experiences as adults. Here, I talk with Avi Wolfson, who shares his journey to heal from his childhood wounds. We also talk about how to present our authentic selves while continuing to protect ourselves in the workplace. And finally, we talk about how to use failure to maximize our growth. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. Welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Files. My name is Kim Menninger, and as an executive coach and former high-tech leader, my personal mission is to help professionals overcome imposter syndrome so that you can advance your career with confidence. Each week, I interview a new guest who brings a powerful perspective to this conversation, including personal stories, best practices, and new insights. The more we talk about this issue, the more we destigmatize imposter syndrome, recognize that we're not alone, and empower ourselves to access the tools and resources that can help us and those around us. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing with others you think would benefit from this conversation. Welcome, Avi. It is such a pleasure to meet you. I'm really excited for our conversation today, and I'd love to start by inviting you to introduce yourself.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, Kim. It's truly an honor and a pleasure to speak on your podcast. I came on this podcast, and I know that you speak to your audience a lot about imposter syndrome and confidence, which are both things that I've really grappled with for most of my life. And they're really important because things like that, negative self-talk, things that sabotage, things that cause us to cause our own havoc and sabotage ourselves out of prime opportunities. And so it's super, super important. This topic is really meaningful and important to me as somebody that's struggled with it and has overcome adversity. And I think that it's important to recognize this struggle and that we talk about it and how we can get through that. And where I'd like to start is in childhood, because that's where this all starts, right? What happens to us in our childhood, we don't leave that behind. Yes, it's in our past. Yes, where we grow and we become adults, but there is an inner child within all of us. And what that means is that there's that kid, that child that endured certain things, and we take those parts of our earlier in our life with us, and they exist within us, and they can be shown in a number of different ways. And I read a really good book recently that gave me a lot of clarity and guidance. And it's called Soul Blazing, and it's by Lisa Haisha. And she talks about the seven different types of imposters that we have and exemplify at times in our life. And when I heard these, I was like, right away, I was like, oh, my friend is that imposter. I was able to pinpoint it. Like, he's the egotist. Now I get it. But it is really interesting to think of it in those terms, and to also have a framework, which was really valuable to me, which I don't want to give away her whole book, but she talks about the soul framework, which is stop, observe, understand, and liberate. Because she's all about taking the masks that we put on, and they're the victim, egotist, seductor, joker, fixer, overthinker, and judge. So these are like the common masks that we put on, right? Because we have things within us, we have a pain or something we haven't fully fleshed out and worked through, so we put on this face of this joker, somebody who jokes, but behind that mask is a lot of pain, right, that exists within us, and we use these masks as ways to cope with it. But with that said, we also hinder ourselves from growth, right? Because that isn't who we actually are. We want to be our own authentic selves. And this is something I'd struggled so much with, Kim, because growing up for me, it was like, I didn't feel that I was allowed to be myself. I had to do things I wasn't interested in. I felt like nobody cared about the things that I cared about. And so I had a very hard time with identity, who I am, what I stand for. And these are really, really important things. And having such a disassociation, oftentimes I found myself trying to be or put on this mask to appease others or to get along with people or to build relationships. And that's not a good solid foundation, acting like somebody that isn't ourselves. Or and I'm not saying that it's not okay to do that. It is okay, because like acting, it has a purpose, right? The purpose is entertainment, right? So that's okay. It's not fake. It's a heightened version of ourselves in a manufactured setting. That's what it is. And that's how I think of it when I do speaking. Because for a while I was like, I had a really hard time grappling. Like, I don't feel like myself. I feel like I'm acting like somebody else. And when I heard that, I was able to make sense of it. I'm like, oh, no, that is me, but it's a heightened version of myself in a manufactured setting, because I'm entertaining, I'm educating an audience to teach them something so they can learn and grow. So that's totally fine. But I think that the problem that I've run into that has been challenging is being my own authentic self, because so much of my childhood was spent appeasing others or just making other people happy at the expense of compromising myself and my values and who I really am and not being able to self-express myself. But I think as time has gone on, it's become more and more clear to me, and I'm kind of like doing what I feel like I've been meaning to do. And I kind of know where that gray area is over how much we are ourselves with also trying to make an impression, right? So there's like some gray area where it's like, yes, we are ourselves, but like, for example, you're not the same person when you talk to kids versus when you talk to your partner or a spouse, or you're talking to seniors. We talk differently, not because that's not ourselves, but because we different parts of ourselves are required to talk to. We adjust ourselves for the audience that we're talking to, and that isn't fake either. That is not being disingenuous or unauthentic. So those are kind of my first initial thoughts about all that, and kind of where I've been to where how I've gotten through this, and you know, something that is still for me, I guess, a work in progress. You know, I was on a different podcast and we talked about self-actualization and how like it's not a destination you ever reach. Like, I got to the top of the mountain, I reached it. It's like, no, every day you're striving to keep going. You never reach the top. You're just a better version of yourself than the person you were yesterday, and you keep going for your whole life. But you never like reach that point, you know. It's just something it's a lifelong journey,
which in my opinion kind of makes life more interesting, because if you could reach the peak of the mountain, then what's the point, right? It's like, oh, I'm just gonna coast for the next 20 years, right? But I want to comment on some of the things that you said, because I think when I think about, and I bring a bias to every conversation because I have a psychology degree, and that is my first love when it comes to interests. So I see everything through the lens of psychology. And I think when you talk about the importance of childhood, it can't be overstated. I think about this a lot, that the experiences we have as children are kind of the foundation. It's the database, right, on which our lives are built, and how we experience interactions with other humans and in different situations informs how we respond to those situations going forward. And if we, as children in particular, feel even more vulnerable than being a child already means, right? Like, if you don't feel safe with the adults around you that have been tasked with keeping you alive and keeping you safe, or if you don't feel safe in your peer group with people that you don't have the power to change or escape, that is a very consequential experience. And then you think about, you go through life and you just keep re-entering social situations, whether that's in college or in other like personal settings or the workplace, that trigger you in ways that you know and don't know. right? Consciously and unconsciously. And so even though we are behaving as adults when we walk into our workplaces, there is that inner child that is still very much alive and very much afraid of ever experiencing the kind of pain that we experienced as children that we felt like we had no control over. And so I just want to make that point as you're talking about childhood, because it's easy to say, oh, let the past be the past. And, you know, now we're in these different stages of our lives. But no, I mean, there is so much of our childhood that's still present in our everyday lives. And I wonder if you can speak a little bit more to how you figured that out. Like, was that something that you kind of always knew that your childhood was having an effect on you? Or did you have to go through therapy? Did you have a moment when it all became clear? Or how did that evolution start for you?
That evolution started when I was very, very young. And maybe at the time I didn't realize it because I was just going through the motions. I'm a child and I don't know what to expect. I don't have an inkling of insight other than seeing adults around me, what adulthood looks like and how it's different from childhood. But I knew from a very young age, I was bullied very badly to a point that some of the memories I forget, but I remember bits and pieces. And that happened for quite a long time. And I remember inside of me, like changes, like, I don't know how to explain it in my mind. Like when it's consistent and it happens and it just breaks you down to the point, like you can feel your self-esteem and soul being crushed. And that's, I remember that feeling. And it's something that I don't want to say is a permanent change in me, but it had a profound impact. It changed my behavior and how I am as a person. And I think that there's a place for healing. And I think that that's been a long time for me and therapy, right? So from a very young age, mm-hmm. I have seen therapists from when I was in school, that's been an important part of my healing process. But I knew very shortly at around the time I became an adult, how my past and my childhood, how those things affected me and how bothered I was. But when I hear an adult saying, that was years ago, toughen up, suck it up, that part of your life is over. That's the most ignorant thing I've ever heard in my life. Those parts of us don't go away. They're still there. And if you don't believe, take it from me, then take it from David Goggins, who wrote the book Can't Hurt Me, because he is one of the toughest, tough as nail people in the world. I mean, Lisa Haisha, she talked about him. His book is phenomenal, Can't Hurt Me. And he grew up in a very at-risk, like he was an at-risk kid and was subjected to all kinds of terrible things. And I think that his book would be particularly helpful for people to know about if they don't already, because he provides kind of a roadmap and guidance for how to overcome adversity. And he talks about the hand we're dealt with in life, right? So that could look like disability, a mental health issue, or some other hardship, whatever it may be, that is your bad hand. And he talks about looking at your bad hand every day and really facing it and confronting it. And that can be painful. And that can be really, it has been for me, but it has been very helpful to me too, to actually look at those things and to face them. And every day it becomes it makes me a little bit more resilient than the last day, right? It's like walking on hot stones. The first time it's going to really hurt, but your feet build up a callus and you stop getting burned. And then you can walk all over these hot coals like it's nothing. And that is like kind of, to me, the framework for how to build it up, right? Because the parts of me that got really hurt, like that's really awful. And it still affects me to this day. And I think that therapy is extremely important. Also, therapy gets a very terrible rap in society. the way I see it is, if you are starting a business and you can choose to have a business advisor that has 30 years of advice, or you could have no business advisor and just go on your own, what would you choose?
Right.
Of course, you'd have a business advisor. A therapist, a doctor, these people are your business advisors for your health, your physical health, your mental health. Why would you do it alone? Because society says, oh, that's lame. Like, no, that's called being smart. You know, have an advisor for business, and also, even more importantly, your health. Because if you don't have your health, you can't run a business. Health, it precedes all of that. That is the first need that we need to have, literally. So understanding these things, you can suppress it. I did for a really long time. It doesn't go away. I tried to numb these things. I remember it. I just spoke to somebody on a different podcast, and we talked about numbing the pain, and it doesn't go away. It's temporary, but it sits and it festers, and it just gets, it doesn't get better. It gets worse, and then it boils over. And that can look like a hospitalization, or, you know, just like really unhealthy ways of, we need to have a valve. People need to have a valve so that they can let off steam and have a place to heal and grow. That's so, so important in this. Because so many people don't. They just think that you have to do it on your own. And I don't think that there's anything admirable about that. I mean, if you're going through something, don't do it alone. Mm-hmm. Have a support group. Find people that you can trust that can support you. That's been extremely helpful to me. And it's not a handicap. It's being smart and choosing to do things in a way that helps us grow and stay resilient.
Yeah. And I like the way you liken it to a business advisor, because there are so many successful people who have surrounded themselves with experts, right? With people who help accelerate their growth in some way. And I would call therapy exactly that. And I often think about the fact that much of what we mock, we fear, right? And so a lot of the bad rap that you're talking about isn't rooted in, you know, logic, or, you know, it's really, people are, it triggers some kind of fear in people, right? Of being vulnerable, of feeling like they aren't doing things on their own, whatever it is. Everybody has their own reasoning, but you're absolutely right. Like, if a resource is available to you that can help you to get through this, why would you say no to that? Yeah. It's such a no-brainer to me. And again, obviously, I bring a bias to this conversation. My growing up was always to become a therapist. So I've always seen the value in that. I've gone through therapy for many years on my own as well. But I think, you know, you and I were talking about this before I hit record, that much of the benefit of this podcast is helping people feel less alone. And when you talk about being part of a support group, when you talk about being able to talk to somebody else about your pain, no matter how long ago it was, because you're absolutely right, it's still very real, that makes you feel less alone. And there is something incredibly empowering about knowing that you are part of a system of people who have experienced other challenges as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so important. And I like the fact that you mentioned that, like, therapy is something that you've also done and I have done, right? And it can't be overstated enough. Have surrounding yourself, right? Because the people that we surround ourselves with often dictate the choices we make in life, right? They dictate our behaviors. So if you surround yourself with a band of thieves, chances are you're going to steal something. If you surround yourself with a group of people who are supportive and positive and happy and try to make each other's lives better, good things are going to happen to you, and you're going to do positive things in life. So that's one aspect of it. And two, the other thing I want to point out is that not every time you speak to somebody are your problems going to go away. But one thing that I've learned in therapy that was beneficial to me is, even during some really, really awful times in my life, going through a toxic relationship in particular that I remember, it didn't make my problems go away, but just having somebody to listen to me was healing. In some way, just having somebody listen. Maybe you don't get all your answers solved or your problems go away, but just having somebody to listen, it does help and it does heal you. It does make a difference. So it's just so important for folks to know that, like, there are resources available. And if things get bad, like, you know, it's okay to lean on somebody's shoulder. And that's not a form of weakness. It's a form of strength. And I think that that's so important to make that point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the authenticity piece that you brought up earlier and the masks that we wear, because one thing I was thinking about as you were talking is there are the shifts we make because of the audience that we're speaking to. Like you said, right? We're going to adjust our behavior based on who we're talking to, what the forum is. And that is not a form of inauthenticity. That is a strategic choice, right? Because you're going to better connect with people if you show up and or at least you express different parts of yourself in different moments. But what occurred to me as you were talking was when the mask is designed to prevent people from knowing the real you, because you're afraid that if they knew the real you, they wouldn't like it or accept it or respect it, right? And I think that's important for this conversation, because there's so much talk about authenticity in the workplace. And I always have mixed feelings about it, because I think that we should feel safe in our workplaces, but I also don't want to give a license to jerks to just be their authentic selves, right? Like, a lot of people are out there that whose authentic selves are not appropriate for the workplace.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's such a great observation and point. I love that. Yeah. And the other thing too, to add to that point, Kim, is that you have to be careful what you share, because if you overshare, these people, I mean, yes, you can make friends at work. It happens. Do I think that you can be it's a family at work? Honestly, not really. If you listen to people like Gary Vee, who's very big on LinkedIn, he talks about that most companies that call themselves families is just a way to garner more loyalty, right? At the expense, like, if something happens to you though, like, and you can't work, like, is your company going to have your back? Probably not. Like, even if you're there for them, like, yeah, they'll ask that from you. But like, if something happens to you, like, chances are it's not going to come in the same way. And I'm not saying that that always is the case, but most cases, I find that to be true. And so I think it's super important that we be very, very careful about who we share information with. Because once you open up that box, you can't close it. Now it's out in the open. If you have people that you think you're friendly with and then they throw you under the bus, like, now what? It's your own fault because you overshared and they have that information. So I would just be very cautious when it comes to that. And in general, right? Not everybody, you can't just walk up to anybody and be vulnerable to them, because, you know, as a huge proponent of Brené Brown, she states that only share your story and pains with those whom you know and you trust, those who will guide you in the right direction, on the right path. So it's super important that we're careful. Not everybody can be a doctor like we want them to, right? So we have to be very careful about that. It's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up too, because I think that there's confusion around what authenticity looks like, what vulnerability looks like in the workplace. We use these terms, we don't define them, we don't make them actionable in some way, right? So everybody's interpreting it for themselves. But I think particularly if you have had trauma in your life, if you have experienced harm and lack of safety, lack of trust, it's even more important to be cautious about who you share with. And that doesn't mean not opening up to other people. It just means being thoughtful and intentional about
selective.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because I want to tell you about this, because most recently I experienced this was really tough for me and tricky for me to navigate. So I did start doing self-publishing back in 2020, March of 2020. And I took a course and I learned it. And they're like, oh, don't use your actual name. Use a pen name. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm going to use a pen name because I want to keep the stuff about my family private. And I also want to do it for marketing purposes, right? So I used a pen name. And what I found was, as that business started growing, people are reaching out to me. They want to interview me. And so I did it. And the first time it went okay and it was fine, but something felt wrong because I was acting like the person of my pen name, and I own that pen name. That is me, but it's something felt disingenuous about it. And then I did it a second time. And the second time I felt even worse. Like, I just felt so out of place and I felt phony. And I think a lot of this, like you said, like, it stemmed from my childhood. I saw like my parents, and they were kind of, you know, like, especially my dad, like just like not authentic, like putting on this facade of somebody that they're not, right? And so like, I think that was part of it, but I recognized that and I decided I'm not going to do this anymore. Yes, I am this pen name, but I need to be honest that I am still me. I am me and I use a pen name. Because for a long time I was like, oh, no. Like, I can just keep this separate. I don't have to say that. But then that felt really like disingenuous and phony. So more recently I started saying, yes, I am a speaker and I write under the pen name Frank Dixon. And I feel so much better now. And I don't have to talk as him because it's a pen name. And that's okay, because people are allowed to use pen names. If you buy a house, would somebody go up to you and say, well, did you buy the house? Is that really your house? You don't have to build the house for it to be yours. I don't have to have written my books for them to belong to me, to be copywritten by me. It's so like, I took more time to think more deeply and I was like, yes. So like, it's important to think about these things. Cause at first I was like, I was having a really hard time like feeling authentic about using a pen name and also being myself and being like, hey, this is my pen name, and being okay with that. And I just, being more open and transparent about that has made me feel a lot better.
I mean, you tell me if this resonates with you, but what I'm hearing you say and what I'm thinking about more broadly in the context of these masks is it a hiding strategy, right? Or is it just a way of being more of who you are?
I think it's both. So when you said hiding strategy, right away that clicked to me as like, yes, I didn't want people to see this, but it was for a specific reason, because I do write personal things about my family in there and how I grew up. And I didn't want to come off like I'm bashing my family. So I hid it, but it was for a good reason. So maybe that's something I still need to figure out how to navigate, right? Because now that I'm transparent, people now can link those two things together. Mm-hmm. And I guess I have to be okay with that and just make it clear that my intention isn't to bash them. So, which is why I say that, right? So I feel like that's sufficient for me and I'm okay with it. And does that seem right to you?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I can see too, the value of the journey, right? Of the incremental choices that you made along the way. So maybe in the beginning, having that separation was important and did serve a valuable purpose. But then as you grew into it, you were able to let go a little bit more, merge the two a little bit better. And I think that's important too, even in the context of the broader conversation that we're having, is it's not a switch that you flip, right? You were talking before about how it's a work in progress, that we're always just trying to be better the next day than we are today. And I think that's really important to emphasize too, is that like, this is a lifelong journey, and a lot of the choices that we make for today, we will change, you know, we will update as we get stronger and as we move forward. And that's important to recognize too. And that doesn't mean that we were weak in the moment that we made a certain choice, right? It just means that that's where we were in the journey then.
That's such a great point, Kim. And right? It's about learning, right? And we're going to fail, and failure is part of the process of learning and achieving success and through trial and error. So it's all part of the journey. I love the way you said that.
Can you talk a little bit more about the failure piece too? Because I know that's something that you mentioned as part of how you see success.
Yes, I love talking about failure because society hates talking about it, right? Failure is bad. We don't like failure. Don't be a failure. But failure is the basis of all success, right? Life, I like this metaphor. Life is one long ongoing boxing match. You win some, you lose some. Nobody goes through life without losing matches, right? You're going to get knocked down. Even the best of the best, Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, they both got knocked down and they were like the greatest in the world. Some of the greatest boxers of all time. But it's not about how many times you get knocked down. It's about how many times you get back up that matters, right? That we become more resilient. And we're still going to get knocked down. And that's okay. Because when we get knocked down or we lose a round, there's always something that can be taken from those losses, which is why I like to think of victory glasses, right? What victory glasses do is it is a perception that we look within our losses in life and we extract positive things from them. So if you lose a round, something you try, it doesn't go well the first time. What did you learn from that? Remember to appreciate your victories, even if they are minor. If we can't ever appreciate our victories, then when we have big ones, we won't be able to allow ourselves to use that motivation as momentum to continue propelling us towards our goals and aspirations. So without failing, we wouldn't be able to recognize prime opportunities. So it's so, so important to fail and not to like be proud of failing, but to be excited about the learning lessons that we can take from those failures so that we can come back harder and stronger for the next round and retain that championship mindset even when we get knocked down.
That's so, so well said. And I think about and talk about a lot on this podcast that if we're not failing, we're playing it really safe. And if we're playing it really safe, we're making our worlds really small, right? We're not taking So we're not growing, we're not stretching ourselves. It's so scary. Like you said, we don't, that term failure, especially for perfectionists, is such a trigger. But really, how do you know success unless by contrast, right? it's through the growth and through the learning that we are able to identify when something is good and when something has gone well. And so I think it is so important for us to intentionally put ourselves in positions where things don't go perfectly. It builds muscles that many of us who are used to being perfect or, you know, not failing, lose, and you lose that resilience. You lose that feeling that I can bounce back, like you're talking about, unless I put myself in the path of it and prove to myself.
Yeah. Right? So true. Yeah. It's a use it or lose it. And I love that. And that also reminds me of a really good book that I enjoy that has such a good learning lesson to what you just spoke about when it comes to challenging ourselves. And that's a book by Susan David called Emotion Agility. And what it stated that in order to thrive, we need to be challenged and develop emotional agility. Once you become too proficient at something, it's easy to turn on autopilot. This in turn leads to rigidity, disengagement, and boredom. It's fine to go through the motions for mundane tasks like brushing your teeth, but life quickly becomes dull and unfulfilling if we aren't consciously challenged by it. It's important to spice things up a bit, search for something more daring. Maybe you could launch a new initiative at your workplace. And that said, well, it's good to be stimulated. We shouldn't overdo it. The key is to balance a little positive stress from new situations with secure feelings of assurance and calmness. And that is known as living at the edge of our potential. And that edge is a line that can gradually be pushed forward, but we shouldn't overstep it. A good way to start challenging ourselves could be something as simple as learning a new language or how to play a musical instrument.
Yes. And that's exactly what I recommend too, because it's a very low risk, right? Mm-hmm. You're not... nobody's judging you. You're not going to lose your job. Right.
Yeah.
Something that, you know, challenges your brain. It puts you in the beginner role again. And
If we just lift the same dumbbells at 1 pound all day, it's not going to, we're not working the muscle in our brain or in our body. Right. So if we do that, we have to step it up, add a little bit more weight, make this slightly more challenging, keep pushing our boundaries just a little bit. It doesn't have to be insane or crazy, but the point is the buildup, and we keep adding, tacking on a little bit more than the last time.
Yeah, I love that. I have a question for you that mm-hmm. is going to be, I don't want to put you on the spot because it's something that I think we are all struggling to answer right now. But I like to think about things at an individual level and at a macro level. And one of the things that I think about a lot is that just as you and I are talking about our own experiences, having gone through therapy, we all have our own backstory. We all have our own set of challenges. Like you were talking about the hand that you were dealt. Some of us more so than others. When we get into the workplace, I think many of us make assumptions that we are interacting with fully healed, whole adults who are acting in rational ways. When in actuality, so much of the behavior that we observe and experience is a reflection of other people's unfinished business, right? Of their trauma, of their the hands that they were dealt. And I just wonder if we know this, if we can just sort of remind ourselves of this on a regular basis, how do we show more empathy and compassion to each other? How do we get to a place where you know, we talked about the value of doing our own work and, you know, doing therapy and taking the steps to heal ourselves. But do you see this playing out in an ecosystem too? Like, is there a way that we can do this for one another as well?
Yes, but there's a prerequisite to this, which is the company. Each company has their own culture, right? And with that said, a lot of it comes down to leadership. And oftentimes in my experience of the different jobs that I've worked at, the leadership almost always dictates the culture and the attitude and the mindset. When you have a toxic or unhealthy culture, it's going to be extremely, extremely difficult to sway the minds. People can be swayed. Opinions can be changed. But in my experience, most people, they have a certain way they like to run things. And it can be really, really difficult to change that mindset unless you can rally the troops and get everybody to do this and advocate for a more empathetic place. For example, sales organizations tend to be more cutthroat. That's not always the case. I think there could even exist like a family type of culture, but it's uncommon. It really comes down, and I'm not saying that like you can try to make a difference, but ultimately it comes down to the leadership. If they're unwilling or they want things to be a certain way, they're going to push that agenda, and there's not a whole lot you can do, is how I feel about that.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. I think you're absolutely right that the opportunity exists, but it's conditional.
Yes.
It's conditional on the leadership, the culture that is fostered by the leadership. This has been such a great conversation, Avi. I'm so grateful to you for being so open and for being willing to share your story so vulnerably. It's inspiring. And again, it comes back to making everyone feel less alone in the world. And so I'm really grateful to you for that. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about you and your story, your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place to reach me, I'm on LinkedIn, and that's where I do all my communication from. I've got all my different ventures and things that I go on there. I'm always happy to connect with people, have a conversation. If you want to talk about something or pick my brain, or you have an idea for a win-win collaboration, I love connecting with people and I love helping people. And I'm just so grateful to you, Kim, for allowing me time to be on your show and to have this meaningful conversation, which I hope benefits your audience and many others.
Thank you so much. I have no doubt that it will. Thanks so much for listening to the Imposter Syndrome Files. If you would like to continue this conversation in a safe and trusted space, I would love for you to join my virtual discussion group every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. For the past several years, the group has been limited to women, but it is now open, regardless of gender, to anyone who is interested in exploring and troubleshooting common workplace challenges, building better awareness of ourselves and others, and becoming more inclusive allies at work. Check out the show notes for more info on how to find us, and please join us next week for another episode of the Imposter Syndrome Files.